A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 321st episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Jonathan Mailer. We mailed him a hat, a Just Shoot It hat. We mailered him a hat, and he emailed us a picture of himself wearing it on set. If you want a hat, go to patreon.com/justshootitpod, and you can get a hat, and you can mail it to us, and all that stuff. And I'm Warren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. And if you take a photo of yourself wearing a hat on set, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Not a guarantee, but a high likelihood.
I mean, pretty guaranteed. Not guaranteed that we'll talk about it on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Certainly, privately, definitely we will.
Yeah, but we will talk
about it. I don't know if that's as gratifying for people who aren't us.
I mean, you know, Matt and I keep track of a who wore it best.
That's true. Yeah. We have a collage. Anyway, I'm Matt Enlow. Here we are. 321. It's just myself and Oren catching up. We're talking about confidence in pre-production, but also production as well. And also we'll have some catch up.
You want to just hop right into it?
Let's do some catch up, buddy.
I'd love to know, maybe if you wouldn't mind telling me, what have you been working on lately?
I'm in post, man. I'm in post on so many things. It's exciting because, you know, it's been a minute since I've done the kind of like social media email blast, like, hey, check out my new work. And so that's kind of nice that I've got a few things that I'm excited about and proud of coming.
Wait, but did you do that or you're going to do that?
I'm going to do that, but I have to wait for the projects to come out first.
So here's the question. How many pieces of work do you think you need to do that email blast?
That's a really valuable question, because the answer is just one thing that you're excited about. But I think you and I both are victims of being like, well, I like this project, but the next one is going to be really awesome. And I'm already neck deep in pre-production on it. I'm so excited. So if I just wait until that one comes out, then those updates will be even better. And boy, this next job is really going to blow people away ad nauseum, basically rinse and repeat. I think it's better to just kind of like, if it's been a while, go ahead and update people. You know, that said, if you have something that's really, really special and your previous work isn't really indicative of the sort of work that you're trying to do next, then maybe you could sit on it. But I certainly am a victim of trying to wait for the perfect project before I update people. And like, there's a lot of stuff that's airing right now that I haven't told anyone about.
I literally don't think I did an email blast like since 2006. It's exactly that. I'm like, well, I have these three spots.
You'll
but
do a Facebook post or you'll do an Instagram post or things like that, though. Like, yeah. I think we're talking about two different types of posts. There's the thing of like behind the scenes, like someone on set, a slate, a shot from a monitor, stuff that's kind of happening in real time, which I think is good. But also sometimes I will bank until the project is out. Mm-hmm. And then the like six great screen grabs plus the spot sort of post of like, new work alert, so excited with the team from X, Y, and Z, shot by, you know, like the kind of the big formal post that people like to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one that I haven't done since like ever, 10
That's
years.
That's not true. It's just not on email. You do it on Instagram.
The closest I've come to that is, hey, updated my website.
Oren, you regularly post breakdowns where you compare the storyboard previs to the final piece.
You said that there are a couple different types. That's the type that I do a lot. But the new work alert, like I've waited a year to, you know, gather all my work to show you all kind of like, mm-hmm. Hey, put me back on your radar. I haven't done like the blast of like, hey, here I am as a director, as opposed to like, hey, I did this interesting effect. Check it out.
What about the other thing I will post, Oren?
Right. So my reel and my website are like the two things where I'm like, hey, here's a bunch of work I did. And the other thing I will do is press sometimes. Like if like something I directed gets written up somewhere, I'll be like, oh, hey, got this cool mention. And I'll just do like an Instagram story or something that goes away after a couple of days.
I would say we're maybe splitting hairs here, but regardless, I'm excited to post the new work that comes out soon.
I guess I'm just saying, is that a thing? Because I get emails from other people. You know, Tony Franklin has been on the podcast a bunch. He's really good at doing that, like doing the mass email. He has his like MailChimp list or whatever, emails producers, emails other directors, creatives, podcast people he knows. It's like, hey, new work. And there's this journalist I follow. She writes for like American Cinematographer and DGA magazine and even like sometimes like Hollywood Reporter. And she interviews filmmakers and DPs and things. And she'll send out an email every couple months like, hey, here's the five articles I wrote. And it was so fun to sit down with Steven Spielberg to talk about this or whatever. I don't know. For me as like a director, I have been thinking a lot about like how I should do this. And my approach was going to be to take basically all my spots from 2021 and 2022. Have them all on Vimeo and downloadable links with good thumbnails and just email personal emails to like the 10 different production companies that I work with.
I think the personalized update is really good. That's much better if you have the time. And if it's a short list, if it's 10 emails, for sure, you're copying and pasting a little bit and stuff. It does make me wonder if there's a generational difference and that as two very young hip directors who are just north of like maybe a divide between people who find it gauche to self-promote and not, you know, younger filmmakers, they're doing it constantly all the time. So there's never a reservoir that's built up where the, you know, they're letting out the floodgates. It's just constant. You know what I mean? Whether you're a producer or a filmmaker, DP, all that, like there are people who just always posting. And like, you know, it can be a little annoying to me, but I think you and I both would do better and not being quite so precious with that, basically.
What we share and what we don't share. Mm-hmm.
It's part of the job. You know what I mean?
I love the casual, like, hey, we did this cool thing on set and here it is. Much more so than the more formal, hey, I'd love to show you what I've been working on this past year. But I think that's cool that you're doing that. And I should probably do it too.
I don't think it's going to be super formal. I think that the more casual it is, the less thirsty it feels. I guess what I'm just saying is that I'm in post on stuff and I'm excited to show people.
So I'm going to Nashville and I'm doing my first shoot with this new company that I just signed to be on their roster. We've pitched on a few things, but this is the first one that we got and that we're going to shoot. One interesting thing about the campaign is that it's an extension of an existing campaign. So I'm kind of matching like the vibe and tone of something that was directed by someone else last year, but we're using the same cast.
Which is not wholly uncommon, right?
For sure. Like I imagine if you're doing a target spot, there's a very well-defined look, you know, big blocks of color, like shapes, really graphic. I'm sure they have different directors. The agency really likes the casting and also like the color palette that they used, the pacing. So there's a lot of things that I'm taking. But also the other campaign shot in LA, we're shooting in Nashville. There's a different product we're advertising. I'm in this situation where I'm really trying to make this my own. You know, I pitched against other directors. I won the job. I have like my version of this commercial, but also I'm fitting in with this pre-existing campaign. So I'm leaning a little bit on the agency to tell me things that they do feel are right for this campaign and things that they don't feel are right for this campaign. And on top of that, I'm working with 100% new crew, new producer, new DP, new production designer, all Nashville based. And so when I'm working with them, I'm like, hey, these are my ideas. What are your ideas? And I think they have are feeling pressure to bring a lot of ideas. So the Nashville crew is trying to, I think, impress me by like bringing a lot of ideas and their things. And then I'm working with this new company who has never worked with me, so they don't know how I prep. Am I a person that goes into Blender and builds the entire set and does storyboards based off that, even though we're already doing storyboards? Yes, but they don't know that. You know, am I a person that's going to like have an hour, 2 hour long call with the makeup artist and the stylist and all those people about exactly how it should look? Probably not. So the topic I want to talk about is how important it is as a director and a filmmaker to be confident in the prep part of the job. So you already know you're going to shoot, but you haven't shot yet. And now you're meeting with your department heads. And there's this balance between you steering the ship and saying like, hey, this is the idea and this is what we're going to do. And this is the tone and this is the performance, this is the pacing. But also at the same time being open to like the DP saying, ooh, what if we got a probe lens and we did the close-ups on the letters with like this, or the producer saying, hey, you know, that probe lens, we can't afford that unless you want to cut the Steadicam. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to like juggle all these things. And I find when you're working with so many new people, sometimes it's hard to figure out when you should be like, no, this is how we're doing it. And when you should defer to other people. And this really came to a head when I was on a call yesterday with the agency. So the agency, you know, for those that are listening, are people that came up with the idea and that chose me to direct it. And they want it to be really good. And we had our production designer on the call too, because we were talking about which locations we should shoot at. And our production designer was talking a lot about like why he liked one location over the other and what we would bring and all the things we did, we would do there. And typically, you don't have like the production designer or the DP talk to the agency, but we were kind of have like a, having a collaborative session. But my executive producer was texting me and saying like, hey, Oren, this stuff should come from you. It shouldn't come from the production designer. It's a little weird that he's kind of steering this creative conversation instead of you. And it's not that he didn't like what the production designer was saying or that no one was in agreement, but I think it was because they had chosen me to direct this thing and it was our first time all working together. He felt like I should be leading the meeting, and especially when it came to creative conversations.
Yeah. So a couple things, the presence of the agency is a real different curveball. It's pretty atypical that department heads would be talking to the agency with you. Sometimes that's happened when it's out of town and the agency is like, hey, we really insist we hire this production designer because they're the only ones that we like, which has happened to me a handful of times, or whatever. You know, if they know them on a personal level and they really were referred by them and stuff like that, makes a little bit more sense. Taking a step back, you know, somebody once said like their approach to directing is that the earlier in those conversations they are, the less they talk, and the closer you get to your shoot date, the more you talk. And I really kind of...
Who said that?
I don't remember who, but I love it. I wish I could remember who, but it's like, it's exactly right. And honestly, it could be Matt Barber. Honestly, I could have learned it on this podcast. It's been long enough.
I've never learned anything on this podcast, so...
But you know, but I think that is really wise and astute. And I think that also, as I've gotten older, I'm less worried about seeming like I'm in control or in charge, quote unquote. I want to hear what people say. And like, I say no anytime I don't agree with something. And I think that's kind of the way that I assert my authority, but I only say no if I don't think that the idea is right, or if I have knowledge that supersedes that good idea, you know. But like, I want to bring the best out of the people that I'm working with. And so one of the best ways to do that is to show that you're listening and to embrace when they have a great idea. What's really hard is when you're around people who are maybe less experienced or just, you know, less secure, frankly, who think that the only way that a director is good at their job is if they are barking orders and being an authoritarian. I've been around directors who don't want to hear a thing from any other department head, and they know exactly how to do everything right, and they just kind of dictate and mandate everything, and they can do good work, frankly, and sometimes that's really valuable. But I've seen firsthand countless times that style of leadership leads to diminishing returns, because the reason that I hire my crew is because I value them creatively. I'm not looking for someone who's just going to follow my orders. I'm looking for somebody who's going to bring something to the table. And if you shut them down, then they don't do that. They learn like, oh, Oren only likes it the way that Oren likes it. And so he's just going to tell me how to do it, and I'm going to follow his directions to a T, and then I'm going to move on to the next job. And they're not interested in offering. You teach them that you don't want them to offer up ideas.
Right.
And so it's really frustrating when a person in power who it's important, you know, thinks you're good at your job is like, hey, maybe you guys have... you're learning about each other a little bit more. But I think that honestly, as soon as it's like, oh, no, I'm going to put my foot down, or, oh, I'm going to ask for something important, as soon as they see that that's your style, they'll snap to it, is my hope.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's a bad look for a director to not have an opinion on something? Like, let's say the DP's like, you're in a meeting, you have your client mm-hmm. or your producer, you know, kind of important people. I want to make this universal, not just apply to commercials, but to mm-hmm. short films, features, everything. That you're in a pre-pro meeting and the DP says, hey, we couldn't get the master primes. Should we shoot on the mm-hmm. Cook S4s that have kind of like a rounder, more vintage look? Or should we shoot on these Zeiss, whatever, so-and-so? Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think lenses it's bad for the director
for me.
To be yeah. like, I don't care? or whatever you want?
So I would say that whatever you want or I don't care are not great answers in so much as they don't inspire your crew. You know, they don't inspire confidence, they don't motivate people, etc. But it's important to caveat that I think that no matter how experienced you are, if you're not pushing yourself, you're going to come up against areas that are not, you don't have experience in, right? Like if you're continuing to grow, you're continuing to expand and flex, you're going to run up against that stuff no matter what, or you should be, right? If you're not, then I think there's a different sort of problem. So what I do when someone asks me a question like that, where I don't know the answer, I'm okay with saying, you know, I'm not really sure, let's talk about it some more. But I think the better and more educational answer for people to take home is a version of, you know, I'm not really sure, but here's what's important to me about, in the case of lenses, the look of the film. This is what I'm going for, right? Because your department heads are in many ways supposed to be the translator between you and the technical execution of whatever it is you're trying to do, whether that's camera or whether that's construction or greens or acting or whatever, right? So it's okay for you to not know everything, right? But I think if you can, in a succinct and clear way, talk about the things that are important to you, and then collaborate with your department head to get to the conclusion, I think that's the best way to do it. The difference between I don't care and I don't know is pretty vast. Or, and I know for a fact, you care about literally every detail. And
I do. There are many things that I'm not good at talking about. Makeup is probably
sure
the most clear one. When
you're not an expert at makeup, but you can say things like, I want them to be appealing, or I don't want it to call attention to herself, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
But usually I'm just like, yeah, just like, you know, the normal stuff, mm-hmm, guy stuff, powder, whatever, grooming.
Yeah. Yeah. The normal whatever is kind of like saying hose it down to a DP, right? It's not that it doesn't, they'll get the job done, but it doesn't
inspire. Yeah.
Inspire. Right.
I'm pretty sure most makeup artists are quite uninspired by me, unless there's,
sure,
unless there's a very specific makeup thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I think, again, you can say like, you know, I don't want it to call it too much attention to itself. I want it to flatter them. You could talk about character. You know, there are other things that you can talk about. I guarantee there are people, especially if they're really seasoned, you know, there's a version of a person who's like, okay, yeah, you just want the
commercial, pretty commercial look or whatever.
Just say that next time. Some people want to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't want to talk about the character. They just want to know what they need to do because, you know.
The costumers are the ones where you're like, I don't know, I was thinking maybe, so she's a mom, so maybe she's got like a cardigan and like maybe, mm-hmm, like a tank top or something, like some jeans. And she's like, okay, yeah, so the commercial uniform. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, just okay, just do that thing that you do in every commercial.
It's okay to be a little self-deprecating about that if you're aware of it. I will do sometimes the opposite where I'll like throw literally whatever I like terminology I have up my sleeve from like Project Runway from 15 years ago when I watched right. it. And I'm just like, you're like running
maybe like
out
a crop
gas.
Top, poplin, yeah, like hemmed, low like cut,
Christian Siriano sort of look. And they're like, okay, dude.
Yeah.
Which is equally bad, frankly. Like if you don't actually know what you're talking about, don't fake it, because certainly they can tell.
Yeah. My thing with wardrobe, what I've done, I think I've gotten better at talking about it, but I think of famous people and how they, mm-hmm, dress, and I try to,
sure,
use them as references or characters from movies or whatever. And so, and I will just go on Pinterest and look at people, you know, or GQ. Yeah. And it obviously depends on the spot, but I tried to avoid dressing everyone like I dress myself,
yes,
which is a very easy place to fall into as a director.
Been there. I think the other thing that we're maybe talking about a little bit is prep. If you need your makeup artist to get this person out of the chair in the next 15 minutes, you need to be prescriptive. You need to be crystal clear. The time for creative conversations was a couple days ago, right? If you're like, hey, we finally got our person booked and I'm going to hop on the phone with them real quick, you can talk about character, which I think is maybe the best. Like, talking about story and character in particular, for the most part, is going to be a good way to find common ground with any department. And they're going to appreciate it because you're saying, hey, I know you're an artist and you're a storyteller. And so we're going to talk about it on these terms because I don't have the vocabulary or expertise that you have. But the closer you get to them being on a deadline, the harder it is for them to kind of put that, you know, creative cap on and explore a little bit, or frankly, to be adventurous, right? Because it's a real problem if you're like, I'm looking for a free-spirited character, and then they do something really elaborate and crazy with makeup that you haven't really approved, and then all of a sudden it's a problem and they have to start from scratch. And then all of a sudden they're, the AD's breathing down their neck because they're 30 minutes behind because this look hadn't been approved or whatever. You do that enough times and all of a sudden you learn like that's not appropriate either. So, but if you've traded swipes back and forth and like, you know, you had the chance or into Google smoky eye and say, yes, that is what I'm looking at, or, you know, look up the latest, you know, makeup look for a character on Euphoria and say, oh, I like this or that, or I don't like it. If you don't have the time to do that, then you kind of just have to default to like basic standard, you know?
The confidence in prep is something I've been thinking a lot about. Obviously, you know, we're talking now about like makeup and wardrobe, which for me personally, those are things that are a little harder for me to talk about. And I do kind of come right out of the gate and say like, hey, I'm not really good at describing this, but this is, you know, like you said, like the type of character I'm thinking of. Shot listing, which I feel like is one of the, you know, top five jobs of the director. Like today I was talking to our DP and I was like, you know, I want to track him walking over here. And then I was thinking like an overhead shot would be really cool of seeing like all these people doing this thing in sync with each other. And maybe he looks up the camera. Now, as soon as you want to do an overhead wide shot, you know, that's like a half hour at least of a setup, right?
It's probably more than half an hour, honestly.
Yeah, half an hour on top of like what just any setup would take, you know?
Yes, yes.
I think it would look cool, but I'm not like 1,000% sure. And so I'm starting to be like, well, do you think it's worth it? Like, and I feel myself like doubting my own opinion sometimes, you know? And then, and I'm worried again, because it's the first time working with this DP, like, is he like, oh, this guy is unsure of him, of himself, you know? Like, how much do you think that stuff matters? Because I want him to be like, oh no, this is awesome, or that's going to take us an hour, I don't know, maybe we can get accomplish something similar from this other angle.
Yeah, the problem is not, I think you know that it would look cool. You're certain it would look cool. Just from what you've described, it would look very cool. That's not the question. The question is really like, is it worth it?
Right.
Well, because you have the big picture. Right?
Yeah. And this is more specific to commercials because we know when we do a 30-second commercial, there's going to be some stuff we shoot that never makes it into the cut. And you don't want that thing that you spend an hour and a half of your 12 hours or 10 hours or however many hours you get shooting to be that thing that does not get into the edit and at the expense of everything else.
What's your schedule like? Is it, it's 1:30 in the day?
No, we're shooting three spots. But one of them,
3 30-second spots in one day?
3 30-second spots in one day, but one of them is like the hero spot that my plan is to spend 10 hours on. We have a 12-hour day. My plan is to spend 10 hours on the one of the 30s that has six different like scenes. And then half an hour on each of the other 30s, which are basically one setup. Someone like standing at like a projector and explaining something to someone else.
You can't be afraid of something not making the cut. That's going to happen. You don't have a ton of control over that. What you can be afraid of, what you should be afraid of, is compromising every other shot, many of which, if not all of which, will also be in the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's like you get one awesome shot and then seven kind of shitty ones because you spent all of your time on that one awesome shot, that's a problem, whether it makes the cut or not, right? And what we're talking about is something that's so different from the rest of the spot that it's going to just take a lot of time to set up.
Yeah. And again, just on a side note, what's funny about this shot specifically is that it actually came from my conversation with you, where you said, hey, I noticed in the campaign before they had a lot of interesting angles, like
super
unique
angles.
Yeah. So I'm kind of trying to find
what's
a unique
version of it?
Angle for each scene, which by definition is just time consuming, you know?
So what I was going to suggest specific to this problem, and then we can get more universal again, shooting techno the whole day, living on the crane, and then getting that shot becomes easier because it's all in the same world, more or less. You mentioned there's a lot of tracking, there's this and that. Like it sounds like a techno shoot to me.
Well, I pitched it as a mostly handheld shoot. And it kind of matches the other aesthetic. And I'm actually kind of excited about the handheldness of it all. Because there's like, I mean, it's a stretch, but there's like kind of like a docu-feel. It's this guy taking us on a tour through this space.
Okay, so then if that's the case, then the move is get yourself like a cherry picker or something where you just like your camera operator is still operating handheld and there you just get him up in the air.
Yeah, we might do like, the DP had suggested like a Movi on like just a jib or something.
Yeah, like
or even like on a, you know, menace arm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
I guess the specifics here aren't that important as much as this idea that I think we fantasize that the role of the director is like someone that comes in and is like, that's it. We're going to put the camera here. We're going to do this. They're going to walk over here. They're going to do this. They're going to give this performance. You're going to give this genius kernel of an idea to make this scene like 10 times funnier. And then you're going to have the edit worked out in your head and it's going to be this perfect thing.
Yeah.
But in reality, I think every filmmaker is a little different. Like maybe someone like you come in and you're like, this is the game of the comedy and this is and this. And okay, you want to shoot on 24 instead of 32 because we see the C-stand? That's fine. Like, and maybe I come in and I'm like very much want the move to, I want to feel these two things on the side because it'll give it, you know, it'll make the camera move feel
better. Move
the camera
better. Or move the C-stand. Yeah, yeah.
But then I'm not as specific about like, okay, so the continuity or something, like his name tag's on the wrong side. Who cares? Like, let's just shoot it. I'd rather get this thing right. So I think maybe something that you're saying is like the longer you do this, the less worried you are about looking confident.
That's a little bit of it. I don't want to come off as though I always feel pretty confident that what I'm aiming for is what I like. I feel like I have that level of experience where I feel pretty good about these decisions almost always. Sometimes I'll be like, is this the right move or not? But it doesn't shake me as much as like, I truly hate it when someone doesn't think I know what I'm doing because I'm not barking orders. Because I feel like confident in listening is confidence, you know, because you're still making the decisions. But it really does get under my skin when someone is like, well, boy, this guy can't make his mind up. And it's like, no, I know exactly what I want. But there's potentially a better answer on the table and I'm going to listen to people and then make my mind up.
I'm like the opposite, I feel like, because I'm always like trying to be very specific and telling people like, this thing and that thing, you know, and I want this and I'll do this. And can't you just put the boom pole on this? Can't you just stand on an Apple box? Can't you do this? And I'm always like trying to pitch technical problems, you know, or solutions to anything.
I think of you all the time when
like put the trailer outside this door. Cause then people can pee and go over here. Like, you
I'll
know?
Do that. Yeah. 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 Sure. I think when you're younger also, and you don't have an AD, you're like, okay, well, if we put this there and that there, and then the AD is like, yeah, I got it. Go think about the shots.
Right. But in reality, I'm like, you know, living in that Dunning-Kruger effect thing, you know, where like when I was first started out as a filmmaker, I was just so confident, you know, and I'd be like, oh, and then we're going to dolly in here. We're going to do this. And we're going to do that. Because I was trying to make like Tarantino films or whatever, you know, and as soon as something looked like something that I liked, I felt like I was doing a good job. And then the more I just learned about all the ways you can make films and commercials and shorts and all that stuff, like the more I just started questioning myself, like, why am I putting the camera here and not here? Why am I walking and not moving? Why, like this spot I just finished, the one I told you that the color is kind of crazy on, it has a lot of static shots. And when I was like conceptualizing how we're going to shoot it, I'm like, yes, that like, it's going to have this rhythm and it's like real precise and the compositions are specific and static. And now I watch that spot, I'm like, oh, I wish the camera was moving the entire time, you know? And so I've fallen into this place where like, I know what I like, but I actually like so many things.
So many things. Yeah.
That it's hard to focus on, to figure out.
The beauty of short form stuff is that you can say, I want to try this style, this look, this tone for this commercial. And maybe that becomes my style forever, or maybe I move on to something totally different on the next one. And so to me, having the guiding philosophies of being clear of like, this is what I want tonally, and that starts in the treatment stage. You know, the question is not, is this a good idea or a bad idea? It's, does this plus the overall philosophy of what we're aiming for or not? Does it contribute to it or does it detract from it, right? That tends to be my guiding philosophy. But all of that is like a very, you know, utopian idea of what it is to direct. And like, I feel like I'm not giving credence to the realities of personalities and anxiety.
Yeah. And schedule and all the limitations. Things going wrong and
totally.
Performances that are off and clients. I think that, the
philosophy takes care of schedule or any of those kind of logistical things, because you're still like, okay, well, what's the closest compromise that I can make? What you're talking about with the confidence thing is like, there's that, but then there's also being second guessed by people, and that
including yourself, which is to me, like, I actually don't mind being second guessed by and other people, because I'm fairly confident in like my answers. I'm like, yes, we're gonna do this, and this is, we're gonna edit here, we're gonna get. But to me, like, especially in commercials, like the biggest thing I'm constantly worried about on set is, will this cut, you know, will this shot cut to this shot? And in a feature, you can take two totally disparate shots. I have nothing to do with each other, crossing the line, different lighting, different everything. If you just sit long enough on one shot and then you cut to that next shot and sit long enough on that shot and you have some music, some intention behind it, it works. You know, but in commercials, when you have 29 frames to get this line of dialogue, show this thing and land this joke, it's all about, is it going to cut or is it not going to cut? And the more creative you get with your coverage, the higher the chance that it won't cut.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I think maybe gives both of us confidence, but I think especially you, is that you've thought through it all. Like, unlike literally anyone else on set, including the agency people, you know, like, doing all that previs and doing all that prep means that, like, again, you can hear many, many good ideas. You say no to the ones that don't fit because of whatever big picture or technical reason that you understand. Because you know that it's 29 frames for this one shot. And someone pitches a very cool idea that's going to take 35 frames. Mm-hmm. It has to be a no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
from that standpoint, I feel good, but I sometimes get worried that it has to be a no because I'm doing my overhead shot, you know, that nobody asked for other than me.
A good friend of ours and producer still gives me a hard time about a shot that I really, really wanted.
Oh, the dolly shot.
It was a long dolly shot, and they were like, hey, you're not going to use this whole thing.
It's a commercial. You can't do a 10-second dolly shot unless the entire commercial is a 10-second dolly shot.
Yeah. And I was like, you can cut out sooner, which is what we did. But they were right. Do you know what I mean? It was a long dolly shot. Also, we made our day.
Also, this producer, she teases you because I feel like it's less of like teasing Matt and it's more she's making fun of like all directors, you know, in that statement.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, directors and their dolly shots. Maybe. Maybe a little bit of that. I think it's a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah. Well, there's this thing we want to put our stamp somehow on a commercial, and it's either going to be a performance thing or a casting thing or a blocking thing or a camera movement or composition. And so when people are starting to like cut all those things, we have to fight back a little bit, you know?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Let me ask you a question on this confidence topic. Have you ever been around a person who is so confident in their own opinions about your work that it makes you, and they're in perhaps like an authority position, maybe we're talking about creative directors or an EP or some sort of producer, basically, or a screenwriter, you know, even a DP, I think, you know, people who are kind of like, you know, above the line, basically, who just are like, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong. And they say it with such fortitude that it causes you to question yourself.
You're talking about while you're making the thing or after
just
you
in
made
general,
it?
That sort of personality is a fascinating one to me.
I mean, I feel like I know people like that, but I can't think of anyone.
I'm around people like that sometimes, and it will take me like that grade school thing of like getting insulted on the playground and then, you know, laying in bed at night. You're like, you're the duty head. Why right. didn't I say that? You know what I mean? Like I need a second to collect my thoughts and be like, no, this is why I wanted to do it this way. And I just was flustered in the moment when you questioned it.
I mean, the only two things I can think of from the top of my head that people have complained to me about that made me feel weird is, one, how much of a take I do. You know, like I tend to like to shoot the entire thing from every angle as opposed to just the words I need.
Oh, like coverage, yeah.
But that's not that common. But the thing that I've had on set and is the thing that where this comes the most is in performance. Like if someone is just not delivering a line the way that someone is expecting them to.
You're saying maybe a client heard it or a writer heard it a certain way in their head and the person is not delivering it exactly that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll come and they'll be like, they're not saying it right. You know, and you're like, well, how it sounds right to me. Like what is bothering about it? And they can't articulate it, and then you have the actor do the same line like 85 times, and then you're like trying to give line reads, and then the whole everyone is sweating, and mm-hmm. the whole shoot falls apart. Happens every time.
Just to talk about the acting thing for a second, because that does bother me very much. Because
you're like, the script's bad.
No, well, I do find if a writer is blaming an actor for a joke not landing, 99 times out of 100, the joke's just not sharp enough. Like, it's almost never the actor's fault if the joke is just flat, you know?
Yeah. Or sometimes it's like a visual joke and it just, you just don't have the resources to pull it off on screen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. If a joke is, or just any sort of beat, whether it's emotional or supposed to be funny or surprising or whatever, if it's contingent exclusively on a very precise line reading, then I don't think it's strong enough, frankly, because and you never have time to like educate someone on your own philosophy around acting on set when you're arguing about whether or not the line is good or not. But to me, a good actor, quote unquote, is a person who can bring an authentic emotional read to whatever line it is we're talking about in whatever tone the piece is in. So if it's a heightened piece and you're doing something totally naturalistic, that's a thing you have to talk about. But if you're doing a heightened thing in a heightened piece and it's authentic and to that performer and it's not landing, that's probably the joke's fault. It's probably the writer's fault. That's a conversation that you certainly can't have on the day in the heat of the moment. Do you see what I'm saying or no?
Yeah. When I'm worried, you know, obviously I'm constantly worried about every single thing, but when I'm worried about a line or a joke not landing, I try to come prepared with like an alt, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is a tactical move, actually, because I think that's exactly right. And if I know, like, if we're in a commercial situation, I won't cut and then I'll treat it like improv. I'll be like, try this out, and then throw the alt at them mm-hmm. before I've cut so that it kind of keeps them at bay, the video village at bay, before they can run over and be like, they're doing my line wrong, you know?
I also, sometimes you can like throw them that alt and then try to get them to do the original line the way mm-hmm. they did the alt, just because mm-hmm. you just give them a line that's super on the nose, you know, or something that it just helps them understand the joke better or something.
Yeah. And I'm not above giving someone a line reading. I just am like, reading it the way you want it read most of the time doesn't fix the problem. It's not funnier. It's just the way you heard it in your head.
It's all in the casting. That's why the mm-hmm. auditions are so, so, so important. And that's why when you are fighting with someone that wants to cast someone that like looks right, but is not doing the performance the best, you need to push back. I did just have this realization about this confidence thing that I'm talking about. And how important it is to be confident in prep is, I think for me personally, on set, I am very confident. Like I know yeah. what the plan is and how we're going to accomplish it and what to move and what looks good and what doesn't look good and how to talk to the actors and how to talk to the clients and all that stuff. But I guess most of my hesitation, my nervousness and anxiety does come in prep, because when you're on set, you've already made the plan and this is what you're going to do. And mm-hmm. it's more or less signed off on.
And you know the plan better than anyone.
Yeah, but in prep, it's when you can still change everything. Mm-hmm. You could change the dialogue, you could change the casting, you could change the location, you could change the camera, the coverage, or the wardrobe. And so it's having all those options that I think maybe is what it's hard to be confident about. And potentially, like, the most important thing that we keep coming back to is being confident in knowing that there are a lot of options and knowing that you'll have to choose an option. And maybe it's not the best one or the funniest one or the most original one, but it's the one you chose. So it's the one you're going to do. And then just by making that choice, you'll have the confidence once you're actually on set to shoot the choice you made.
Right.
So confidence, it's good for being on set. Don't mm-hmm. worry about it. In prep. That's my conclusion.
It's funny that you wanted to talk to me about this, because I feel like you're one of the more confident directors I know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, we talk to so many directors
You're more worried about like looking like a nerd because you wore the wrong thing than you are like, is this going to cut? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, on set, I'm not worried. The confidence issue isn't on set. It's before set. And we talk to so many directors on this podcast and in life. And I watch a lot of people's work, you know, every movies, TV, commercials. And I am so curious, you know, we had Tony Ascenda on, I some of his work, like on Dave and stuff, I just think it's so good. And some of his music videos, and we tried to extract from him, like how he comes up with his shots. Mm-hmm. And he never really gave us an answer that I found satisfactory at least. and I'm realizing now that every time we talk to a director, they've already shot the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So there is no doubt in their mind because they're on a podcast to talk about why what they shot was shot the way they shot it. And so, you know, if I look at my old work, I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I shot this. Yeah. Maybe I would have done this a little different or this a little different, but this is what I shot. And I'm pretty confident in the choices I made, but I guess all the question marks are leading up to the shoot. So that's where I'm second guessing myself a lot. And maybe I should be doing it more privately than on a podcast in front of thousands of people, but hopefully it'll make other people feel good about second guessing themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Everybody, I think, gets caught off guard with a question or a term, you know.
That's something I think you never need to be nervous about, is not knowing terminology.
Yeah.
It's just it's just being able to make the choices that is the thing. As directors, that's basically what we work on, is having an opinion and having taste and being inspired. And also kind of like you said, like coming up with that overall approach. So when someone is like, do you want this scientist to wear the lab coat or the button down shirt or the uniform? You can say to yourself, well, you know, we're kind of like making reference to these like 50s movies. So let's go with the lab coat because that's what they would have done.
The final thing of like the overall approach is that sometimes other stakeholders will let their personal taste kind of seep into the project. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but like if you're doing a 50s send up with two scientists and an educational video, but someone's like, I don't like the look of lab coats because they look square or they're like a clunky silhouette or whatever. Yeah. All of that could be true.
Or the DP's like, I don't want white things on screen.
Right. But the bottom line is that's what they wore in the videos that you're referencing.
Right.
And so, look, you have to be a little diplomatic on it, but, you know, kind of, you know, the person whose taste matters most is the director's, and then everything else. Like, that's kind of why you got hired. So, well, Oren, keep your chin up. I'm teasing. I know you're not actually that nervous about any of it.
Yeah.
I've seen all your prep. It's fucking dope. You don't need me to tell you that. But it is a good thing, I think, for listeners to think about and talk through and process a little bit.
And if you're ever not sure about a choice you're making, just realize no one's ever sure. Just make a choice. Anyhow, do you have anything to endorse?
Yeah, let's jump into unpaid endorsements.
Unpaid endorsements.
So the first thing is something I just got on Amazon. I did the thing where I got advertised this on Instagram, and then I was like, I bet there's a cheaper version on Amazon, and I was right. I got myself a headphones hook. So it clamps onto my desk, just kind of like the same way, you know, like our mic stands or like a desk lamp clamps on. Looks like a little vice grip, but then it folds out and has like a little hook on it, which is designed specifically for the size of my headphones, which is friggin' great. But I always wear like studio headphones and I'm on Zoom all the friggin' time. So I use headphones nonstop, and they're always just kind of like clanking around on my desk. There's never a good place for them. They're on top of the Zoom mixer half the time. It's just like a nice little organizational thing to have the place for them now.
That's
trying
cool.
to be a more organized person. And the part of the trick is like having a good place to put the stuff that you have.
Yeah, no, that's a really good one.
My second one is an article that I will admit I have not read, but I have read via proxy because my wife is obsessed with it. It's a Vanity Fair article called How Grey's Anatomy Writer Elizabeth Finch Used Lies to Create Must-See TV. And it is a long-form article about how this woman was leading multiple lives, lying about herself to become a very established network television writer. And it is crazy balls bananas. So she wrote on Grey's Anatomy and lied about having had cancer. She was pretty obnoxious and like long-winded and would like take over control of the room and tell all these stories. And everyone was kind of like, well, we're going to just kind of suffer through this because this poor woman is dying and these could be her last words. But it turns out she was just a big old liar and also was in a relationship and had told that person a totally different story about her life, neither of which were true. But it's pretty crazy and also like talks about how, you know, you'd think that she was like a mastermind who would keep these worlds separate and stuff, but like she just like let them mingle, like was sloppy about lies all the time. She'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't come into work, I have chemo, and then like have Facebook posts on the same day where she's like somewhere else, she's like on vacation, like a really truly sloppy lie. This is not a catch me if you can sort of situation, but no. With really crazy big lies. The story is in Vanity Fair. You can check it out. Scene Stealer, The True Lies of Elizabeth Finch. Kaplan, what you got?
I got two bad ones.
Ooh.
And one is I got one of these new Mac Studios.
Mm-hmm.
I got the base model, except with like the extra RAM, 64 gigs of RAM and the bigger hard drive. As listeners know, I'm a big believer in getting a big hard drive on your computer. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. I told you this already, but the one thing I will tell listeners that's amazing about it is that it is silent. It's this computer, you put it on your desk and it makes no noise. I have an iMac that makes 10 times as much noise as this computer. So it's kind of nice to have a super powerful computer that doesn't make any noise. And if you are a user of the Adobe products, Premiere, After Effects, all those things, they just updated them all to use the Apple Silicon, like the M1 chips. The M1 Max, the M1 Pro, the M1 Ultra. I think everyone will start noticing some really impressive performance improvements if they get some of these new Apple chips.
Very exciting.
So my other thing is if you want a bunch of COVID tests and you don't want to pay $20 per box, if you have any health insurance, there's a really good chance that they're covered. You can just go to like CVS, and I have two kids and a wife. And we get 4 boxes per person. So that's 8 tests. So between the 4 of us for free, we can get, you know, 32 tests. From USPS, I think you can get 8 free tests right now.
I think that's 8 per
household
address. Yeah,
yeah.
Household, yeah.
So no regular human ever needs that many COVID tests unless you have COVID or just part of your household like us. Only the adults have COVID, have tested positive for COVID, and the kids have not. So we're testing 4 people every day. So if we had to pay for all those COVID tests, you know, that would be hundreds of dollars. But yeah, you can just go to any pharmacy and just give them your insurance info. Hopefully, if you have health insurance, they'll cover a bunch of free COVID tests.
Well, awesome, Oren. I'm glad you're feeling better. You sound good, nice and strong.
I've been feeling fine this whole time. One of the things about having COVID is that people just text you every day and they're like, how are you feeling? And you're like, I'm fine. You asked me 4 days ago and I was fine then. I'm fine
now. I'll
say
this. I have like a good number of people I know who have COVID right now. We're definitely in the middle of a surge, at least in Los Angeles. And there's a pretty big range.
A big range of like how people are feeling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, for sure you can like, you get sick.
Yeah. Well, and I think we are in a sector where people are testing with a way, way greater cadence, faster cadence than anyone else. Like, because it's like, to be on set, you have to test all the time. And so some people who are feeling fine and probably wouldn't have tested and wouldn't have noticed realize they're positive. And then there are people who are like, oh my God, this is the worst cold I've ever had in my life. And, everything in between. Anyway, keep in touch with your friends, everyone. Show them that you love them. And just listen to the ways that they're responding.
Just like my Facebook post, okay? That's enough.
Now we all know Oren's love language. Well, this episode was brought to you by our very many patrons. It was wonderful. Thank you all for supporting the show. If you want to learn more about the show, you can go to justshootitpod.com. But you can always tweet at us across all social media at justshootitpod. And you can tweet at me at Mr. Matt Enloe.
And I'm on Instagram at okaplan. I'm on Twitter at smightypyleg. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. The music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And leave us a review on iTunes. We know you don't want to be doing whatever the next thing you're supposed to be doing is right now. So just go to iTunes, procrastinate, leave us a review. We'll read it online. It'll make us very happy. And thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.